live from the Poly Market Studio in L.A. It's the Young Turks.
If you like the Young Turks podcast, I think you'll love a lot of the podcasts on the TYT network. Old School, it's one of my favorites, one of the favorites for a lot of the listeners. Please check that out, subscribe, share it. That makes a big difference, and give it a 5-star rating. Thank you. All right, welcome to the Young Turks. Cenk Uygur, John Ireland with you guys. I tell you it's a big news day, but it is every day. John, it's so we had Trump creating maelstrom of news, right? And then he's still at it. But now all of a sudden we got two other factors. One is the presidential race has begun. You know, it's almost 2 years from now, but no, it's right here. We're in the thick of it. We got Kamala Harris. We got a story about her today. We got nonstop stories about Bernie and Elizabeth Warren, yada yada, right? And now the third thing that has arisen, which is wonderful, is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She says something, and then the world explodes. And back and forth we go, back and forth we go. And that part is wonderful. So there, a new force rises, right?
I don't know. I heard that the real story of the midterm was a new crop of centrist freshman Democrats.
Guys, man, I'm going to tell you again one more time, man. You guys helped to do that. And I think in a lot of ways you helped to change the world. We have unleashed the left upon America. Isn't it wonderful? You'll hear from billionaires later in the show saying that they are, quote, scared. Not physically, of course, because that's not what we do. But they're scared for, oh my God, what if you start taxing my billions?
They might be physically scared of Cardi B, but that's the only part
maybe
that
Cardi
they're physically
B.
scared of.
All right, so all that's in the news today. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez rocked Davos, and she's not even there. So they're all trying to figure out how to respond to her. And you guys had a part in doing that. That's awesome. All right, anyways, lots of stories to get to. Oh, one more thing I want to tell you guys. So we got Old School tonight, members, don't miss. Today we got Michael Schur and Mark Thompson, so that's a great combo, okay, and myself. And so Old School fans, I think, will love that. But on Rebel Headquarters, I'm going to talk to somebody who's affected by the shutdown, so don't miss that either. Get all of our shows very conveniently. If you're a member, tyt.com/join. Actually, I'm going to just start telling you tyt.com/. That's funny because I just forgot.
John.
We're done with that, John.
I'd say John. I don't know.
Trial. Thank you. Trial. Yes. Mm-hmm. Because that just automatically gets you the first week free. So you can. This is actually great.
We're still doing that?
Yeah, we are. We decided to continue that because that's actually. You can check out Hostmates. You can check out the shows from this week. We got Kamala Harris's town hall coming up. State of the Union was coming up, but hold on for the first story, right? And tomorrow's second hour is just for members. So perfect time to try at tyt.com/trial. All right, what's first, John?
Okay, let's start off with, God, our country's insane. Is there gonna be a State of the Union? Well, it depends on what time you're watching this. As of when I'm filming it, no, there is not going to be a State of the Union because of a ridiculous back and forth that's gone on throughout the day between Donald Trump and Nancy Pelosi. So you might remember that not long ago, Nancy Pelosi sent a letter to Donald Trump informing him that because of security concerns, he was not going to be able to have his State of the Union address in the halls of Congress during the shutdown because of concerns about their ability to secure the location. That story didn't seem 100% accurate, but still, if she wants to block him from having the State of the Union, she could probably do that. And Donald Trump's response was restrained at the time, but he did respond in letter form today, setting up a potential challenge. So he said in part in this letter, "Thank you for your letter of January 3rd, 2019, sent to me long after the shutdown began." It was like days, I don't know what long, but inviting me to address the nation on January 29th as to the State of the Union. As you know, I had already accepted your kind invitation. However, I then received another letter from you dated January 16th, wherein you expressed concerns regarding security during the State of the Union address due to the shutdown. He then lists a couple of reasons he believes that there was no real security concern, and then says, "There are no security concerns regarding the State of the Union address, therefore, I will be honoring your invitation." We then had a brief pause, And everyone wondered what's gonna happen. Is he just going to march into the House of Representatives? Are they gonna kick down the door? Nancy Pelosi got in front of that saying, in another letter, they're all communicating via letters these days. I am writing to inform you that a House of Representatives will not consider a concurrent resolution authorizing the president's State of the Union address in the House chamber until the government has opened. Again, I look forward to welcoming you to the House on a mutually agreeable date for this address when government has been opened. So, looked like it wasn't actually going to happen. But still, if he's dead set on kicking down the door, he could hypothetically try to do that. And then he was asked about this, and it looks like he has taken himself off of the brink. So here's a couple of video clips. In the first, you're gonna see him addressing questions about what exactly is gonna happen with the stalemate.
Mr. President, Nancy Pelosi just responded, and she said she will not consider a concurrent resolution to have you come to the House on January 29th, as literally the State of the Union. Your response to the House Speaker.
I'm not surprised. It's really a shame. What's happening with the Democrats? They've become radicalized. They don't want to see crime stop, which we can very easily do on the southern border. And it really is a shame what's happening with the Democrats. This will go on for a while. Ultimately, the American people will have their way because they want to see no crime. So we're all working very hard. We'll have to respond to it. We'll respond to it in a timely manner.
Okay, so there's been so many responses already, but apparently he's gonna respond again. However, at that same meeting, he, I believe, was fairly definitive about the state of the State of the Union.
The State of the Union speech has been canceled by Nancy Pelosi because she doesn't want to hear the truth. She doesn't want the American public to hear what's going on. And she's afraid of the truth. And the super left Democrats, the radical Democrats, what's going on in that party is shocking. I know many people that were Democrats and they're switching over right now. They're switching over quickly. We're supposed to be doing it. And now Nancy Pelosi, or Nancy as I call her, she doesn't want to hear the truth.
That might be the most brutal nickname he's come up with yet.
That's not a thing. Nancy Pelosi, or as I call her, Nancy. That's her name.
That's worse than the Mike Pence thing.
Yeah, that was what, like when Mike Pence was introduced at the Republican National Convention. They're like, and he is Governor Mike Pence, or as we know him back in Indiana, Mike. Pence. Yeah, that's because that's his name. Right? Like they've just... I think they've reached maximum uncleverness.
Mm-hmm. I think the right wing's ready for their own Daily Show now.
Yeah.
They finally reached it.
So I like that we've gone old school. Like this is almost Game of Thrones kind of stuff where they're writing letters to one another. Mm-hmm. I wonder if it's on a quill pen and if they stamp it like House Pelosi sends this letter to House Trump. Right.
Yeah, it's the emblem of the Filet-O-Fish for him.
And then there was a drama around the sergeant at arms, because it turns out Nancy Pelosi not only controls the sergeant at arms in the House, for some reason she controls all the sergeant at arms. So then there was
cloaks.
Yeah, no, but kind of, because the sergeant at arms will decide whether to open the door or not. Mm-hmm. So that's the level we got to, where we're having a real discussion about will the sergeant at arms hold the door? Will he Hodor?
Yeah, against okay. Stephen Miller, just trying to push it open, probably wouldn't work.
So now, onto the substance of the speech being canceled. I'm with John, yeah, it's canceled for now. But I think now we're getting to a lot of pressure on both sides, but especially Trump. Of course, he's got a wonderful lie in there, which is he can't go two sentences without a lie, usually four within two sentences. But he's like, that's why a lot of people are switching over from Democrats to Republicans now. Nobody's doing that. In fact, the latest poll shows that the number of people who want the government shut down because to fund the border wall is down to 7%. Seven. Okay. So a lot of people are switching over. No, yeah, they're switching over. That's that part is true, but they're going in the other direction. His unfavorables is now at a record high, 57% saying he's got they've got an unfavorable opinion of Donald Trump, and the list goes on and on. So the pressure builds and builds and builds, and so I think that, and I've said this before, and I've been wrong, and I actually am now. I'm going to pay Anna the $50 I owe her for over this bet, and I'll explain that in a second. But I think they're gonna get a deal soon. But don't quote me on that, because I've been wrong about I thought they were gonna get a deal earlier, right? And I thought the Democrats would buckle, and they didn't. That's what I'm gonna pay in. That was our bet. And it's now over. And no matter what happens going forward, the Democrats did not buckle. I mean, I can't say no matter what, right? So I should pull that one back too. But man, Nancy Pelosi, I have to give her a ton of credit, has been way stronger than I anticipated. Mm-hmm. And this was a, when you throw the sergeant at arms at somebody, okay, that's badass. Mm-hmm. And even, and I'll go further, because in that initial meeting where they got Trump to admit that it was gonna be the Trump shutdown, and I was too tough on Pelosi and especially Schumer. I was tougher on him in that meeting, because he wouldn't look Trump in the eye.
It seemed weak.
And it seemed weak, and the optics didn't look great. No, they got him to admit that it was a Trump shutdown, and it crushed him. Mm-hmm. And she has not bent at all to his will. And it's driving him crazy. And it's lowering his poll approvals. He's not gonna be able to give his propaganda speech, which all the State of the Unions, whether they're Republican or Democrats, are obviously a large degree propaganda, where they get to make their own case, the president does, right?
Yeah.
So, but I think they'll resolve, they'll eventually be a State of the Union, let's put it that way. Because at some point they'll reopen the government, and at that point, Pelosi's gonna say, now you can give the State of the Union. But it appears that she's broken his back, so great job by Nancy Pelosi, and I thought I'd never say that.
Yeah, I predicted that they would fold as well, which I think a lot of people probably would have. And I don't mind admitting that I was totally wrong on that, because in this industry, for some reason, the more predictions you get wrong, the better you do. So I was dead wrong, by the way. Please take note of that.
Yeah, if you keep going like this, you're gonna get a multi-million-dollar TV deal.
I might, some speaking fees. But I think what happened was, any shutdown for the party that initiates it is probably not gonna work out your way. He was already unpopular, and instantly, as soon as it started, there, more and more polls started to come out showing that the people blamed the Republicans. And then as you could see day by day, and I saw Nate Silver, your favorite person in the world, he was putting the average daily approval rating of Trump as the shutdown was going on, and you could see movement negative every single day. And so I think that the natural inclination of the Democrats to fold, when they see the polling just every day looking better for them, I think that that might have given them some extra spine. Also knowing that if they buckled, these new outspoken members of the House would be all over them.
Yeah, and what I thought would happen, which is the markets going down and then Democratic donors panicking, didn't really happen. So the markets went down in the beginning, but then bounced back up for other reasons unrelated to the government shutdown. There has not been the kind of significant downturn in the markets that would cause a panic in the Democrats. Mm-hmm. So since that didn't happen, that also helped fortify them. But all those factors are important and real and relevant, and it's our job to give you that context. But nonetheless, credit where credit is due, at the end of the day, Pelosi stood strong. Again, a sentence I didn't think I'd ever say. And she's got a lot of hype around the mainstream media in Washington, et cetera, over stuff she didn't do. But in this case, she did do it. Mm-hmm. And so again, great credit to her.
I believe her approval rating is at like a 10-year high. Uh-huh. So Trump, that's a gift that he just gave her.
Yeah, and by the way, all Democrats, take note, when you are strong, your approval ratings go up. Mm-hmm. They don't go down, okay? Now when Donald Trump calls you the super left, your approval ratings don't go down, they go up, okay? You should be proud to be the quote unquote super left.
Yeah, she's even earned a cool nickname, Nancy. I do agree with him though. I've always felt that left Democrats are pretty super. Agree with him there.
Maybe we should do t-shirts like that on shop.tyt.com.
Super left.
The super left.
I think we should do that. Okay, you wanna move into some of the darker side of what's going on?
Sure.
Okay. We're at day 33 of the shutdown, and every day it seems like the damage continues to accrue across the government, and in many cases in areas that I would not have predicted would be so negatively affected by the shutdown. And that spans a lot of different areas. I wanna touch on many. The first though is the criminal justice system, the FBI, the courts, their ability to do their jobs is apparently being constrained in a lot of different ways. So FBI agents were interviewed by Natasha Bertrand of The Atlantic. And she says one agent, speaking anonymously, said his unit had lost several sources who have worked for months and years to penetrate groups and target subjects due to the inability to pay confidential sources. Quote, these assets cannot be replaced, the agent said. Quote, serving my country has always been a privilege, but it has never been so hard or thankless. Another agent reported, not being able to pay confidential human sources risks losing them and the information they provide forever. It is not a switch that we can turn on and off. Others complained that their investigations were being slow-rolled, with dozens of grand jury subpoenas going undelivered. Quote, the operational impacts of the shutdown are immeasurable, said one agent in the Northeast region. Quote, we have postponed the indictment of subjects due to the shutdown. And when Donald Trump finds out that indictments are not going out, he is not going to allow the shutdown to continue. We need to have smooth running federal investigations.
He's like, wait, the FBI can't invest crooks anymore? Great, the shutdown continues. Mm-hmm. So he has literally had dozens of texts attacking his own FBI because they're investigating criminals like himself. So I don't think he's going to shed a tear over this. But for the rest of us, if you actually cared about his stated reason of shutting the government down, which was it's a national security problem, well, then this is incredibly counterproductive because this is an actual national security problem. So the border has been the same way for decade after decade. And you could say too many people have crossed over without documents. But in those folks on average commit a lot less crime than the average American does. And that's a fact. So there was no new emergency. That's also a fact. In fact, the number of people crossing the border is lower now than it was earlier. So there's nothing new that creates any kind of national security threat. In this case, this is new and it is a national security threat because the FBI can no longer pursue criminals. They've got issues on multiple fronts. So their informants are not getting paid, so they're leaving in forever, as John just pointed out to you. But they are also having trouble getting subpoenas because legal assistants aren't being paid. So they can't subpoena people. They're having trouble getting warrants. The judiciary is now backed up and is no longer taking less urgent cases. And the reasons pile on top of one another. And so now criminals are literally getting away with their different crimes because the FBI is not equipped to be able to handle these investigations without any money, which makes sense, right? And so it's not just whether that FBI agent's getting paid or not, it's all the support staff and everything surrounding it. And there's a couple of other national security issues, including TSA agents not showing up to work. But this is now a real legitimate threat to our security.
Yeah, and one of the things that in all of our coverage going back weeks now on this that I have tried to stress is that the right wing wants you to believe that, sure, the shutdown's rough and man, people aren't gonna get paid, but someday the shutdown will end, they'll get their pay and everything's back to the way it was. But that's not true. There are a lot of things that you can't take back. People who go into debt and have their credit ruined during this because they're not being paid, their credit doesn't just magically improve once they get their paycheck. I spoke with a union vice president for air traffic controllers this morning, and he said that people have left. They're not working there anymore. Their careers have been derailed. And even if the shutdown ends, maybe some of them can get jobs in the field again, but many are now done. That is a permanent change to their life. These sources that are being burned, that is a permanent change. Now, you brought up the courts. So additional reporting, the administrative office of the US courts said in a statement on Tuesday that the federal courts can sustain funded operations through January 31st, which is like a week away or a little bit more, through an extension made possible by moving funds around. Courts will continue to conduct criminal trials, but some federal courts have had to issue orders suspending or postponing civil cases in which the government is a party. Again, an area where hypothetically Donald Trump might benefit since he is potentially the target of some of those lawsuits. Yeah. Similar things like not only you mentioned TSA, but the IRS announced today that earlier it had been said that refunds would still go out on time, but they can no longer promise that.
So now more security matters. US attorney's offices are dealing with their own employees not being paid and other budget constraints. So there goes the prosecutors. Trump government was going to participate, as every US government does every year, in a border security conference. In this case, it was going to be in Scotland. 85 different countries get together and share their notes on how to prevent people crossing borders illegally, and all the way up to smuggling in nukes, etc. And now that is being postponed because we don't have any money to go to that conference. So now think about it, guys. And I almost hesitate in saying this, but the terrorists are, they can figure it out on their own, right? Now, if you were a terrorist, when would you strike? When there's less TSA agents to monitor people at airports? Remember, almost no terrorist comes through the border. They come through planes more than anything else, right? And then they use planes as weapons. Now the TSA agents can't check you as well. The FBI is hurt, prosecutors are hurt, and there's very little cooperation between government agencies, and things are falling apart. So it's not a joke and it's not an exaggeration. If anybody was gonna strike, unfortunately, this would be a good time to do it, which again, that's why I hesitate in saying it. I don't think people are watching and be like, yeah, right, like, oh, okay, yeah, I hadn't thought of that, right? But we gotta go. We gotta open up the government, okay? We gotta have the FBI on the job. We gotta have the TSA guys checking there at airports, et cetera. Because tick, 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 tick. I mean, in this case, unfortunately, almost literally, like, if we don't get this thing straightened out, now we have a real danger on our hands.
Yeah, and everything that you said is true, but even implicit in all that we're saying is a bit of normalization of insanity, where you're saying if it continues, but we are already historically far into a shutdown by a good, like 50% higher than the next longest shutdown in history. But this is the effect of Donald Trump. Everything that you thought you knew about the government and the way things could or should ever function gets thrown out the window.
There's only one silver lining here, which is that in most government shutdowns, they're short. They only affect 25% of the government. The military, the cops, et cetera, keep working. So then people oftentimes are like, oh, the parks are shut down. I guess that's the only thing government does. Now this has lasted so long and it's affected so many different areas. The Coast Guard came out yesterday and was like, what are we doing here? None of our guys are getting paid. We can't work. Yeah. So now they're starting to take other jobs, right? So now people are going, oh yeah, I guess the Coast Guard and the FBI are the government, aren't they? And so are prosecutors and all these other people that keep us safe and all the other vital things that the government does. Because now that we're falling apart at the seams, that's why Trump's numbers are in the tank. They're tanking and they're down to 7% for keeping the government shut down in order to fund the wall.
Yeah,
I mean, 93% of the country is against it. Because part of what's happened here is American people going, oh, it turns out we need the government.
Yeah.
And that's your silver lining.
Yeah, that's true. And that 7%, I mean, no matter how you look at it, that's awful. But that means he's lost the vast majority of his base. Like the core, like teens and MAGA hats are turning against him at this point. Like that's how bad that is. And an AP poll has him dropping from 42% approval last month to 34% now. That is a big chunk. And you look across all of these different polls, he is down. In most of these, he is down to the previous lowest number he'd ever been at was in the wake of the attempt to repeal the ACA and when we were talking about the tax bill initially. That was his previous low in like December of 2017. And he has reached that again.
Yeah, 34%. That is a miserable approval rating. Mm-hmm. That is terrible. So, and by the way, I mean, this is classic Trump. So, I didn't get what I want. I'm gonna shut the government down. Okay, I'm gonna take my ball, go home. I mean, that's what kids do, right? And we told you all along he was a spoiled child. He's been a spoiled child his whole life. Never understood the consequences of his actions. Never read past the page. So this is what happens when you don't understand the consequences of your actions. All of a sudden, people go, "Oh, it turns out the president is a spoiled child."
Yeah.
And the brat is now affecting our lives.
Yeah.
And we can't stand it.
A couple more random polls, just because I thought they were really interesting. So in his first 2 years. So historically, he is the only president on record who never passed overall 50% approval in the first 2 years in office. Every other president has been able to do that. Some significantly higher, you know, in the wake of 9/11 or whatever, much higher. He never was able to do it. The overall support for his impeachment is higher than his approval rating, which is pretty amazing. I randomly saw, and when you see this number, understand that it includes many Republicans. 57% of the public say that they believe Russia has dirt on Trump.
That they have like compromising information on our president. 57% of the country believes that. I mean,
I just use all of his numbers are getting bad at this point in every area, related to the shutdown or not related to the shutdown.
And that leads to a point I often make. Like, people are still think that Trump has some sort of magic and that he could be deeply unpopular as he was in 2016 and still win elections. There ain't no magic to winning an election when 57% of the country thinks you're working for the Russians. Like, so people are like, oh my God, we can't let Trump win. Don't worry, Trump's got that on lockdown. Mm-hmm. Okay, I mean, the only way you could possibly lose is to put another terribly establishment candidate up against them.
Couldn't happen.
I know it could. I hear you. But don't be afraid of him, is my point. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer stood up to him here. and all of a sudden it worked. And there is no magic. And the more you stand up to him, the more he seems like a spoiled little brat, because that's what he is.
Yeah.
And the worse his numbers are. So he's not. There is no real power here. When 57% of the country hates you, right, and thinks you're working for our adversaries, there is no power. You should just bulldoze him, as Pelosi very accurately and effectively showed with this government shutdown.
Yeah. Want to see the first break?
Yep. Let's do that. When we come back, the billionaires of the world are apparently scared crapless. Is that a thing of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez? Yeah, they're literally talking about how afraid of her they are. Mm-hmm. Love it. You'll love it. Come right back.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
All right, back on the Young Turks. Let me read some comments for you guys. Let's go to the member section first. Lofar says, "I know more Republicans jumping off the Trump train because I have not met a Democrat that is now a Trump follower." Me too. I haven't seen a single progressive or a Democrat who go, "You know what? You know, I didn't believe in Trump, but he's really proven me wrong."
Well, they.
I mean, who would think that, right?
Trump is on Twitter all the time, and there's those hashtag exit things every once in a while, and he sees that and he thinks, "Oh, this is representative of reality."
Yeah, that old dem exit or walk away, they're all propaganda paid for by right-wing billionaires. It's hilarious. It's not remotely true. But Trump, of course, is an idiot. You're right, he probably sees that. He's like, "Oh yeah, they're walking away." Mm-hmm. I hear they're walking
trending,
away.
It's gotta be true.
Like, the funny thing is it's meant to trick the average American, but it accidentally tricks Trump instead.
Yeah, more gullible than the average American.
Well, by a long shot. Juliet writes, "Trump is so scared of Pelosi, he can't even give her a proper nickname." Maybe that's right. He's like lying. So, well, I don't want her to mess me up again, though. Man, look, all right. I don't want to get into it. Give her credit on today, okay? I can't help but say it. I'm afraid she's going to use that credit later to fight against progressives. But still, we have to be fair and honest. Credit where credit is due. All right, the Neon Donkey says, "The lives of the children in cages on the border are changed forever as well." Mm-hmm. Another good point. Laura Gelizunas writes in on Twitter, referring to Nancy Pelosi, otherwise known as Nancy.
I think everybody should know that by now.
Yeah, she's a lifelong professional politician. She knows how government works, who the players are, and how to play them. He is so out of his league, bigly. I think that's exactly right. Okay, so guys, tomorrow, hour two is just for members, but that's okay. You can sign up at tyt.com/trial. You get a week free anyway. So try it out, go look around the website, watch Hostmates, see John get embarrassed.
That's a spoiler. Spoilers.
No, you never know what happens, you could come out on top. And watch Old School tonight, watch our coverage, not only hour two tomorrow, but on Monday, we're doing special members only town hall for Kamala Harris. We're not doing the town hall, CNN is, we're covering it. And we'll give you our analysis of how she did and her policy positions. So if you're a member, don't miss that. TYT.com/trial to get a free week of membership to try out all these programs we have for you guys, including Rebel Headquarters tonight, where I'm gonna have somebody on from the air traffic controllers talking about how the shutdown has affected them. Okay, John, what's next?
Okay, lots is next. For the past month, new representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has been helping drive a debate over raising the top marginal tax rate up to 60 or 70%, which is significantly higher than it is now, although significantly lower than it has been historically. And while this is going on right now, and that's something that's just commonly being talked about, you have Davos and the World Economic Forum. You have all these billionaires getting together, and when asked about it, they are equal parts they think it's funny, and also pretty anxious. And you can see that coming through in some of their statements. So here are a few of the things that have been reported on. So when billionaire chief executive Michael Dell was asked to explain why raising the top tax rate would harm economic growth, he said, "Name a country where that's worked, ever." One of his co-panelists, an MIT professor, jumped in to say, "The United States."
After decade,
which is a point we've made many times. And Michael Dell knows that, right? He has to know that.
No, I bet he doesn't know that. I think the propaganda in this country, I gotta keep it real with you, not just from the Republican Party, but the mainstream media, has been overwhelming. All this talk of trickle-down economics, you just give the rich money and eventually it comes back to you. And they never report the stagnant wages. And so that propaganda worked. They've deluded themselves into thinking, no, of course, you give tax cuts for the rich, and that's the only way the economy can improve. Mm-hmm. When in reality, they are quite literally ignorant. They're ignorant of our history, that our biggest economic booms were from the 1940s to 1980, when we had marginal tax rates, not everybody, only for dollars above a certain threshold. Ocasio-Cortez's suggestion is above $10 million, not the whole 10 million. And that's per year, by the way, right? So they're making 10 million, if you're making $10 million every single year, every dollar above 10 million would get taxed at 60 to 70%. And that is how it was in this country for decades. And that was our top economic growth time. It ranged from 70 to 91% for the highest marginal tax rate. Not in Venezuela, not in Norway, here in America, and that was when we did our best.
Yes. Now, let's go through a few more of these quotes, because I have a feeling you're probably gonna like some of them. So we have a global CIO of Guggenheim Partners, Scott Minard, who said, "It's scary. By the time we get to the presidential election, this is going to gain more momentum. And I think the likelihood that a 70% tax rate or something like that becomes policy is actually very real." So there you have a bit of anxiety.
Yeah, look, I live in a weird world where I intersect a lot of these different bubbles. So I know Guggenheim, and none of these folks are bad guys. Well, some of them are, not Guggenheim, but some of the other guys at Davos are bad guys. But they're good folks. They just live in their own bubble, and in their bubble, the idea of being taxed at 70% for their 10 millionth dollar is frightening. Like, what would I do? I mean, really? But they haven't. Guys, when I was on TV, and I'll talk more about this in the post game, and there's some things that Ocasio-Cortez said, and now started a conversation that I have to confess that I'm proud that I took some small role in. We'll talk about that in the post game too. TYT.com/join to become a member and get all of our shows, including the post game, which is just for members. Anyway, and I made good money when I was on TV. Okay, that's what I'm gonna talk about more in the post game, but. So I know how much good money is and how much you need, even in need, right? And how much you can spend, et cetera, right? 10 million, you cannot spend $10 million a year.
Oh, okay. Some yachts.
I know, but like they literally have parties where they have camels and and famous stars that come, they just don't know how to spend the money. Why would you bring a camel to a party, okay, right? So, 10 million every single year is, unless you're insane, is more money than any person can spend.
They
are addicts.
Let alone
the billions that they have.
They have a psychological problem.
They do, because it's about their ego. Because you can go on any fancy trip, buy any fancy car, buy almost any fancy house in the world. You can buy your yachts, you can do all that stuff before you even get to the 60% marginal tax rate. But to them, the idea that once, that anything above 10 million every year will be taxed a little bit more, they're like, What will we do? And Ocasio-Cortez makes a great point. She's like, we got people in Alabama that have ringworm because we have no health care. And you could name the state. We got, so what's a bigger thing to be frightened of? You know, that 40% of this country goes paycheck to paycheck, and any little variation, $400 bill, knocks them out financially until they have to borrow money from a friend or an institution, etc., right? Mm-hmm. Is that a bigger problem? 40% of the country, is that a bigger problem? Or a couple of guys at Davos are worried that their 10 millionth dollar is going to be taxed a little bit more. Any rational person would know what the real problem is, but they can't see straight at Davos. Mm-hmm.
Let's go through a few more of these. So in an interview with Bloomberg TV, investment banker Ken Moelis, whose net worth hit $1 billion last April, claimed AOC's idea, quote, would be disastrous for the economy, suggesting that people in the US would no longer have a reason to work. I would stop coming to work.
No, but think about that.
What would be the point?
No, I mean, look, so again, you don't have to demonize these folks because Moelis, his company is interesting and a good company, right? That's my opinion on it. But he really believes that if you can't make $1.3 billion, well, why would anybody show up to work? Like, no, they live in their bubble too much. Mm-hmm. He went on to say, even in the US, what's gonna happen to the two work-worst family? You forget where 70% starts to kick in. Do you really think that people are having both the people in the household work, both the adults in the household work because they think they can get to $10 million a year? No, they're both working because they can barely scrape by.
He's implying that the other partner has to work even though one of them makes $10 million a year.
That's insanity. They have no idea how clueless they sound.
Yeah.
Two people are not working to get to $10 million. They're working to get to $40,000, $50,000 a year combined. Yeah. Do you know what the minimum wage is? There's no way Ken Moelis knows what the minimum wage equals for a year. I say this,
$750,000 a year.
They probably think that, right? So if you work 40 hour week, 50 weeks or 52 weeks a year, it comes out to a little over $15,000 a year. $15,000 a year. So if two people work minimum wage jobs in that family, they'd get to $30,000. Mm-hmm. And this guy's saying, well, you know, then people wouldn't work, both adults wouldn't work in the family if they couldn't get to 10 million.
Yeah.
I mean, this is worse than Marie Antoinette. Well, yeah. Then why don't they eat cake?
let them eat party camels.
Yeah. I mean, who would work if they could only make $9 million a year?
Yeah.
By the way, it's not like you can't make more than 10 million. It's just a 10 millionth dollar gets taxed at 60 to 70%. Mm-hmm. They're unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, I try to, like, I know our audience obviously understands this better than most, but I just continually say, you will never be affected by this new top tax rate. And it is likely you will never meet anyone who will be affected by this top tax rate. They are at fancy mountain resorts and off on their own islands. They're living lives that don't make any sense by our standards. It didn't make sense by their standards. This is all fantasy money. If you have $1.3 billion, it doesn't matter. Getting to $5 billion doesn't change your life. It's all just, it's zeros written on paper. There's no difference to an actual human at that point. Now, I do want to give you at least a little bit of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's response to this, because of course it's been all over the place today that the billionaires are either laughing at her or shivering in their boots, expensive boots. She said on Twitter, it's wild that some people are more scared of a marginal tax rate than the fact that 40% of Americans struggle to pay for at least one basic need like food or rent. Imagine if we focus positively away from fear of the former towards solving the latter.
So I want to talk about the second half of that, because I already talked about the first half. Now, think about it. Right now, the media is going nuts because they're going and asking all the billionaires, are you scared? Are you okay? Do you need a safe space? Have you been triggered, etc.? All that time and effort. Imagine if they spent that time and effort to go down to Alabama, Kentucky, West Virginia, or it doesn't matter, pick a state, Rhode Island, Hawaii, and they talked to people and they said, hey, what happens if you have to pay $400 for your car because it broke down? Where's that story? All those stories of like hundreds of millions of Americans, nowhere to be found in the media. Because look, unfortunately, a lot of the folks I assist, especially on TV, they're in the Ken Moelis group. They're not billionaires. Well, some of them are, but they all live in the bubble, in the class where everyone is extremely wealthy. So when she says 60 to 70%, They flip out. They're like, oh my God, that would affect me. That would affect me. Mm-hmm. We got to cover this. Hey, producers, let's get on this, right? Yeah. Whereas the ringworm, no one they know would ever get ringworm. Mm-hmm. The idea, like when we repeat this fact, and Bernie Sanders and Ocasio-Cortez, Joe Sandberg, who's on this show, has done a wonderful job of fighting for it in California, repeats the fact that $400 knocks out 40% of the families in America. They literally can't believe that. They're like, no, that couldn't be true. $400 is a bad hand in Vegas. Not a bad night, a bad hand in Vegas. Mm-hmm. They can't believe it. So it's not about evil, it's about cluelessness. And they are, because they're in their bubble.
Yeah. And I just want to clarify that much of it applies to ringworm as well. She clarified that she meant hookworm, which is a more serious parasite. Regardless, so you talked about what if you talk to everybody. Well, we know since she brought it up, a poll found that 59% of voters were in favor of her idea. Even 45% of Republicans liked it. Turns out a lot of Republicans aren't billionaires.
That's right. See, that's what's stunning to the people in television. They're like, what? 45% of Republicans, there's not a single Republican I know that wants to raise taxes on the rich. Yes, because every Republican you know is really rich.
Yeah.
But most of the Republicans in the country are not rich. And so look guys, it isn't about, and this is the propaganda they do on television every single day. It isn't about taking money from the rich. No. It's about how do we build a functioning society where we lift all boats. Where we don't give equality of results, we give equality of opportunity. So is there a tax rate at which you say, hey, you know what? Everybody, the folks that are making $10 million a year or $1 billion, et cetera, they're great, they're in good shape. Now let's use some of that wealth creation that was, by the way, also made possible by our schools, our hospitals, our police, our roads, our bridges, et cetera. Let's use some of that money to give that same kind of opportunity to other people so they could also live the American dream. Actually, that would allow Republicans, Democrats, et cetera, to actually make it to the $10 million. Yeah. That would actually support the American dream. But again, the media is too blinded by their own social circles. So, and then Ocasio-Cortez also said some other things that I thought were fantastic. She said, I'm not saying that Bill Gates or Warren Buffett are immoral. That's funny. I mean, it's very similar language, obviously, that I use all the time. But a system that allows billionaires, and it's independent, we obviously didn't talk about that. But a system that allows billionaires to exist when there are parts of Alabama where people are still getting ringworm or hookworm because they wouldn't have access to public health is wrong. She went on to say, maybe this idea of idealizing this outcome of maybe one day you too can be a billionaire and earn more that millions of families combined is not an aspirational or good thing. See, this, that's where she goes further than me. Like, I get it if you want to be a millionaire, and I support that, as long as you don't crush people on your way, et cetera, right? But she goes deeper and says, why are we all striving to get to 10 million or a billion? Mm-hmm. What are you going to do with it? Shouldn't we, maybe, how about if we strive to help our fellow man? I mean, she doesn't say this part, but wouldn't that be a more Christian thing to do? Mm-hmm. Or by the way, Islam focuses on the poor maybe more than any religion. Wouldn't that be a Muslim thing to do? Wouldn't that be a Jewish thing to do? Wouldn't that be a decent person thing to do, right? And for her to start get people thinking about questioning that, hey, maybe the priorities that television told us for these decade after decade, get Dynasty, Dallas, Apprentice, get rich, get Kardashians, get rich. Maybe that isn't the only goal. And so if she has begun to unravel that myth. Mm-hmm. Wow. I mean, that is more good than anyone could have imagined.
Yeah.
And finally, now reporters, including Business Insider, are talking about how acknowledging that her campaign was centered around economic justice.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. All the things that the right wing told you about her, oh, all she cares about is racial issues, or that's why the Democrats said, oh, that's why she got elected because of demographics. No, it was about economic justice. Social justice too, of course, but economic justice was the center of that campaign. I know, because that part I was involved in. Look, we named it Justice Democrats, that's the group she's from, because of social and economic justice. It's not an accident. So now it's working, and I want to talk more about that in the post game too. The fact, I mean, you guys helped to launch things that might literally change this country. Last thing as part of that. And now they're referring to how she has banned corporate PAC money from her campaign and helped to start that trend. We were trying to start a trend, and it looks like we have. And so you, in a sense, the Young Turks audience, have launched this goodness into the world to combat the evil that actually does exist. Some are in the middle, some don't know how clueless they are, and then there's the guys like Trump who are prime evil. Okay, depending on how you want to characterize it, and if you're not a religious person, all he cares, like I'm not, all he cares about is himself, and he has no empathy for others. And what we've done, and what she's done, and what is start a conversation around what if we helped one another instead of only being selfish. And that's just an unbelievably great conversation to start. You know who wins that conversation? You do. All of us do. So great work. And if the billionaires in Davos are a little scared, well, I could live with that.
Second break?
Let's do it. When we come back, we've got Michael Cohen. Why is he actually not going to testify now all of a sudden? Mm-hmm. And does that relate to another crime for Donald Trump? Obstruction of justice, I think this is the best case for it. He's done a thousand things about obstruction of justice, but I actually think this is the worst. We'll explain why when we come.
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your activity more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's ExpressVPN.com/TYT. Check it out today.
Bye. We hope you're enjoying this free clip from the Young Turks. If you want to get the whole show and more exclusive content while supporting independent media, become a member. All right, back in the Young Turks. Just time for a couple of quick comments here from the member section. Cognosco writes in, Ben Stein compares Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to Stalin, Hitler, Mao, etc.
Yep.
I mean, to them, they're like, if you take my 10 millionth dollar, okay, you are Mao and Stalin combined. Mm-hmm. Okay, I mean, whatever. You keep saying that and see if the country's with you or not.
He said that raising the top marginal tax rate to 60 or 70% would lead to genocide.
He's an idiot.
We had it higher than that.
Yeah, just because he wears glasses and talks funny doesn't make him smart.
Yeah.
Okay, what is with Republicans who their main claim to fame for being smart is talking funny?
I don't know, Ben Stein,
Ben Shapiro, and Jordan Peterson.
They're all going to talk like this, so I'm really smart.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's how it works.
At least Ben Stein was in Ferris Bueller. I mean, he's got that going for him.
Okay. Don, with a lot of letters, I mean numbers after it on Twitter, says, I occasionally listen to Rush Limbaugh to see what lies and madness is headlining. AOC has been one of his subjects daily for over a week. He calls her that Cortez. He just makes up things, false equivalencies, and every kind of trash talk, of course.
Okay, so related to that, Sean Hannity on his radio show had a guest on, and they were coming up with nicknames for her. Oh, Scario, oh, Socialisto, but they decided that one was too long.
Oh, they're so clever. Next thing you know, they'll be like Trump, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or as I call her, Alexandria. All right, last one. JGlory82 on Twitter says, sounds to me like there's going to be an avalanche in Davos with all the snowflake billionaires scared out of being taxed more. That's funny, it is Switzerland,
that's
could happen.
Good.
All right, what's next?
Okay, let's turn to a little interesting wrinkle in domestic news today. Former Trump personal lawyer Michael Cohen has apparently postponed his House testimony, which was scheduled for just a couple of weeks from now, referencing ongoing threats against his family from both the president and the president's now lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. So a statement from Lanny Davis, Cohen's legal team spokesman, came out that said, due to those ongoing threats against his family from Trump and Giuliani, as recently as this weekend, as well as Michael Cohen's continued cooperation with ongoing investigations, by advice of counsel, Cohen's appearance will be postponed to a later date. We don't have any idea at present when that later date would be, although bear in mind that Cohen is scheduled to start a 3-year prison term on March 6th. And so that means that he's got to fit a lot into his social calendar between now and then, although hypothetically he could be subpoenaed in some fashion to do it afterward. I do know that House Oversight Committee Chairman Elijah Cummings said, "We will not let the president's tactics prevent Congress from fulfilling our constitutionally mandated oversight responsibilities. This will not stop us from getting to the truth." So those threats referenced, we do have some of those available if you'd like to see them. So Trump had tweeted not long ago, quoting Kevin Corkey of Fox News, quote, "Don't forget, Michael Cohen has already been convicted of perjury and fraud. And as recently as this week, the Wall Street Journal has suggested that he may have stolen tens of thousands of dollars." And then Trump adds, "Lying to reduce his jail time, watch Father-in-Law," which sounds like a terrible new NBC series. Watch it, everybody. But we also have a little bit more. So here is Trump on video.
"In order to get a sentence reduced, he says, I have an idea. I'll give you some information on the president. Well, there is no information, but he should give information maybe on his father-in-law, because that's the one that people want to look at, because where does that money? That's the money in the family. And I guess he didn't want to talk about his father-in-law. He's trying to get his sentence reduced."
What is his father-in-law's name?
I don't know, but you'll find out and you'll look into it, because nobody knows what's going on over there.
Oh, yeah, I will. So she is just desperately trying to do his job for him effectively, and that's what she's there for. But she accidentally makes him look ridiculous because she asks a simple follow-up question. This guy that you continually tell us is behind all this illegal stuff, what's his name? Trump doesn't know. He has no idea.
That would require 1 minute of homework. And by the way, that was his personal lawyer. So if you thought his father-in-law was so shady and that made Michael Cohen get involved in dirty affairs, why did you hire him? So, by the way, I love the constant reference to how Michael Cohen was his fixer. Do you have a fixer? I know I don't have a fixer. You know why? Because I never broke anything. That's what you need a fixer for when you break laws all the time and you need somebody to go run after it and try to fix it. So there's two things here. One is Michael Cohen's reference to the safety of his family and the constant threats from the president and his followers. So I believe him and I don't believe him. I believe that he is constantly being threatened. I know because I'm constantly threatened. We're daily, Trump followers and right-wing nut jobs threaten our safety every single day. It's actually a story that doesn't get talked about at all in the press, but the right-wing terrorizes people they disagree with. They constant threats of harming you physically. Now, if I get it that bad, imagine what they're doing to Michael Cohen, right? So that's part of it. But I think that he's partly using that as an excuse because he's probably been getting that for months now since he's turned on Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And no, what Trump has done, this is the important part, is by putting the father-in-law out there, he's saying people should look into him. That is a signal that if Michael Cohen goes to testify, the other Republicans will ask him questions about his father-in-law. And then in an effort to get him to lie and get him in bigger trouble or admit things about his father-in-law. So now his father-in-law probably is like, don't go to, I have no idea what his father-in-law has done, okay? So all this might be terribly unfair, but whatever that threat was, it seems to have worked. So he's worried that the Republicans are gonna do Trump's bidding and attack his family. Now, rightly, wrongly, I have no idea what his father-in-law is up to, okay? So now he's backing out. You know what that is? That's witness intimidation. That's obstruction of justice 101. Hey, you should watch your family. If you're gonna go testify against me in Congress, yeah, okay. Well, let's see what my guys do to your father-in-law. Now, Giuliani says, well, no, that's not obstruction of justice because he didn't threaten to kneecap anyone or kidnap their kids. That's literally what he said, okay. But if you threaten their financial well-being, their and their whether you're going to start a prosecution of someone, right or wrong, that's also a threat. Yeah. And that's definitely illegal. I think this is actually the worst obstruction of justice that Trump's done, and he's done a lot already.
Yeah, like anything having to do with Cohen, I am automatically suspicious of. I don't think that anyone should or that anyone does take anything he says without verification as necessarily being true. And I'm sure that if we ever see any kind of report out of the special counsel's investigation, they will not rely on anything he says without documented evidence. That said, the goal in continually bringing up watch father-in-law was to scare a witness. The goal in continually floating pardons and saying that some people are rats and some people are like, you know, I mean, maybe we have a pardon, maybe we don't. Those are all obvious obstruction of justice. That's why I get so frustrated when people continually act like, oh, we're waiting for the big one. We're gonna find out if he does anything that merits impeachment or some sort of legal proceedings. We have continually seen it in plain sight on Twitter and on Jeanine Pirro's show and all of that. It is ridiculous at this point to pretend that we are still awaiting some sort of big smoking gun. The smoke is in our eyes. Maybe that's why we can't see it anymore.
Yeah, he fired James Comey, who was the head of the FBI, in charge of investigating him, and then admitted on national television that he fired him because of the Russian investigation. That's like going on national television and saying, well, of course I did a bank robbery, I needed money. So I went into a bank with a gun and told them to give me the money. They did, and I put it in my pocket. Mm-hmm. And then you're like sitting there going, wait, did he just admit to a bank robbery on national television? Mm-hmm. And since he did, people are like, well, I guess that's not illegal because he just admitted it on TV. Mm-hmm. So I guess we'll wait for the smoking gun. No, the smoking gun was when he said it on TV, yeah. Right? And including this one. When you intimidate a witness, just doing it brazenly doesn't make it any better, right? Mm-hmm. Doing it on national TV or on Twitter doesn't make it any less illegal.
You want one more little bit of brazenness? So asked about whether this is witness intimidation, Trump responded, he's only been threatened by the truth. Which sounds like he's admitting that he is threatening him.
Of course, because Trump is an idiot. He doesn't understand. Hey, don't say I'm threatening him, even if it's with the so-called truth, right? They're him and Giuliani, I mean, they're gonna do a movie. It's gonna be a sequel, Dumb and Dumber. I can't believe that Giuliani is the dumb in that equation, because mm-hmm. No one's gonna be dumber than Donald Trump. Yeah. They say I'm threatening him. So what if I threaten him with the truth? You know what I'm saying? Why is the father-in-law? Republicans, make sure you ask about the father-in-law, try to intimidate him. What? All right, we're out of time.
Yeah.
All right, we got a great second hour coming up for you guys. The LA teacher strike, and now we got a new birth of theory. Of course we do, of course we do.
Is it about Biden?
Gee, I wonder who it's about. Really? Okay, you know what, actually, speaking of Biden, let's do the Biden story.
I messed up by saying Biden then. Just when you think you're out, they pull you back in.
Sorry, Here we're giving you more show.
Okay, there you go. There's something going on outside of my vision, but okay. Last October, in the immediate run-up to the midterm elections, former Vice President Joe Biden went to Michigan, and he went there to give a speech. He was collecting $200,000 from the Economic Club of Southwestern Michigan to address a Republican-leading audience. According to a speaking contract obtained by the New York Times and interviews with organizers, the group, a business-minded civic organization, is supported in part by an Upton Family Foundation. So Fred Upton is a representative in that area. Importantly, a Republican representative in that area. So it is odd that Biden was giving a speech to an organization that was linked with the Uptons. So he got that money, and while he was there, he spoke favorably of Fred Upton, specifically in an area that, of course, Joe Biden has sort of a special history in, and that has to do with fighting cancer. And he pointed out Fred Upton's bipartisan history, especially in this area, saying that he is one of the reasons that we are going to defeat cancer in the end. And because this happened just a couple of weeks before the election, if you're a Democrat in that area and you're trying to take out Fred Upton, and if you think he's one of the big targets, finally he could be eliminated, the former vice president, the Democrat, going there and giving a speech so favorable to him, that certainly looks bad. And he talked about the Upton's support for landmark medical research law, called him a champion in the fight against cancer, one of the finest guys I've ever worked with. And those remarks were quickly integrated into Republican advertisements, both in video form and in flyers, pointing out that these are his bipartisan credentials, Fred Upton. He's a guy that can work across the aisle. Look, even Biden likes him. And if you're one of the Democrats working in that area, you're very frustrated by that. So Eric Lester, a retired physician who chaired the Democratic Party in a county in that area during the midterm, said he viewed Biden's supportive remarks about Upton as a betrayal. Lester, who attended the speech, said he had confronted an aide to Biden in the hallway, telling him the former vice president had badly damaged the Democratic cause. Now, importantly, Upton went on to win that election, I believe by about 4.6 points. So fairly close, especially historically for Upton.
No, very close. The Democrat could have won that election. We had a wave. We picked up 40 seats. And so let's do all the different angles here, because there's a bunch of different angles, including the trap that was laid for Biden that he fell into. So first off, credit where credit is due. I've complained before that the mainstream media, including the New York Times, does one critical piece after another about Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, but almost never touches the establishment candidates. Biden is an establishment candidate, and this is a critical piece about him. So, yeah. Okay, fair is fair. Nice work in being even-handed on that. Okay. Number two, Biden messed up here, but. I do feel a little bad for him, and I'll explain why. Okay, so he has a bunch of rules that are really good rules about his speaking engagements. He doesn't talk to big banks. He knows that that burned Hillary Clinton. Okay, but at least he learned that lesson, right? He doesn't take money from foreign countries for his nonprofit. Good, that's another lesson from Hillary Clinton. He doesn't let schools pay if he's going to speak at a school with funds that come from the government or from extra fees charged to students. So those are all good things. Now, in this case. He should have known better, because it's $200,000, $150,000 for a speaking fee, and $50,000 in travel allowance. I don't know if he had to go around the world a couple of times to get there, but anyway, that's okay. And in the pamphlet, they clearly said that this will be, quote, to speak to primarily older conservative Republicans and local community members. So this was a speech designed for Republicans. So he goes to a close district, 6th congressional district of Michigan, and helps the Republican. I mean, I don't know if he knew how much it would help Upton, but when he called him one of the finest men I've ever known, they immediately, as John told you, took that and put it on television, on Facebook. They did memes around it, and the group called Defending Main Street spent a lot of money taking Biden's quote and running ads in favor of Upton. And then when his opponent asked for Biden to clarify and say, hey, no, I support the Democrat in the race, Biden wouldn't do it. Now, if you got paid $200,000 and then you say good things about that guy and then you don't back the Democrat, I mean, they say Bernie Sanders is not a Democrat. Mm-hmm. Bernie Sanders went around the country campaigning for dozens of Democrats in this election, trying to help them raise money, get awareness, win the elections. Okay, now
so Biden says that he did endorse a lot of Democrats as
he
well.
He did.
And
he
won Republican, kind of.
he. To be fair to Biden, he endorsed 135 Democrats. But then, on the other hand, if you endorse 135 and this guy asks for your endorsement and you don't do it, that also sends a message, yep. Right? And further fair to Biden. Upton is terrible on everything else, but he was great on the cancer bill. Mm-hmm. And Biden's son died from cancer. He cared. That's why he cared so much about that bill. I think for him to say, hey, we worked across the aisle, and Fred Upton should get a lot of credit for that, that's a fair statement. But when you're giving a ringing endorsement overall, well, that's a little bit of a different ballgame.
Especially when, in a slightly zoomed out view in that topic, in 2017, he helped craft a bill to repeal the Affordable Care Act. So okay, you're good on cancer, but you want to take away people's health insurance. So,
yeah, that's disastrous. And finally, we get to the trap. So the Republicans invite him, give him $200,000, then he uses quotes to help a Republican win the election. And then it's a different Republican group, America Rising, that does a Freedom of Information request to get the speech, which they know about, to then release the story out into the public so the New York Times covers it. Mm-hmm. So they laid a bear trap for Biden and he walked right into it, did what he normally does. He goes over the top and praising whoever he's talking about. And then they turn around and go, you see that? He's such a bad Democrat.
Yeah.
The Republicans are releasing this story telling us how bad a Democrat Biden is.
Yeah.
Don't ever trust a Republican. I've said it on the show 1,000 times. And that is actually one of the problems of Joe Biden as a candidate. If he becomes president, what's he gonna do? He's gonna do the same thing Obama did, so that Biden has been doing for decades. Reach out to Republicans, hoping to get compromise and reasonable negotiations with them. That is not going to happen. The only thing they're ever gonna do is set a trap for you. And I'm not interested in having 4 more years of trying to reach out to Republicans.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, you got $200,000 for it. I hope nobody traps me like that ever. Don't do it.
Okay, John will not fall for
it. No,
okay.
But you should try.
All right, we got to take a break. And we got a great second hour for you guys coming up. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.